Hello and welcome to another episode of Scare Traducing, the horror movie podcast for horror movie virgins. I'm Callum McNabb.
I'm Gisela Martinez.
And we are here today with an overly delayed episode. An episode which was supposed to come out towards the end of February.
Oh, really?
It's now the first, well, we've just finished the first week of March. Personal reasons, I lost my job, so...
But he got a new one.
I got a new one now, but I've been spending the last few days, weeks, whatever it is, trying to find a new job that sitting around to doing a podcast seemed, I don't know, a bit novel, a bit unimportant, I guess, in the grand scheme of things. And I had kind of assumed that maybe we just won't do the film we're talking about today, which is Knock at the Cabin by M. Night Shyamalan.
But we changed our mind.
I did really want to do it. Like, I saw this movie twice at cinemas.
I know.
I remember when we went to see it at the beginning of February, and then I went again. Was it when I lost my job and I was just had time off? Or maybe I had a holiday booked already.
Yeah.
And I just was like, screw it, I'm going to go and see it again. And I was like, yeah, I can't wait to talk about this. And then obviously shit happens and you're like, So anyway, this movie is well delayed. I'm sure people are probably not going to listen because... It's Oscars week, or we're in the run-up to Oscars week.
But a lot of people don't care about the Oscars because, I mean, they just leave a lot of things out that are so good and only because it is horror, it is too much of a musical or things like that. Come on, yeah, they're really snobby sometimes.
But I don't think the Oscars movies are as boring and as plain as some people say. If that makes sense. Okay, so for example, this year, Babylon wasn't nominated for Best Picture. It's not in the 10.
I didn't even watch that.
No, you didn't. But when I went to see it at the cinema, an elephant shits on camera within about 2 minutes of that movie. Triangle of Sadness is nominated for Best Picture.
That one was fun.
There's a 10-minute vomit sequence. I don't think the Oscars are quite as, so uptight British pristine dramas as people like to pretend that they are. I think they can have wildness in them. You know, what else? Avatar, The Way of the Water, that's a blockbuster. Top Gun Maverick, that's a blockbuster. They're both up for Best Picture. So I'm not necessarily... I would agree that horror has been snubbed in the past and sometimes...
Nope.
Yeah, this year...
Exactly.
I would say Nope deserved something. I would say that.
A few things,
I didn't think it was ever going to get in the Best Picture race, though.
No, but... There's other categories and...
There's plenty.
There's nothing there.
I agree, but what I'm saying is not that the Oscars don't have a problem. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying that horror fans and genre film fans like to sort of suggest that the Oscars are this brand of film. And yeah, maybe at times they are. But as I've said, everybody thought Babylon was maybe going to be in the running. Maybe it wasn't going to get nominated, but Damien Chazelle, he's been Oscar nominated before. His film... La La Land won Best Picture for about 2 minutes. He won Best Director that year. So Babylon, who knows what is going to happen? It's got big stars in it. Margot Robbie, Brad Pitt.
Yeah,
who knows?
And
And then an elephant shits on camera 2 minutes in. And then there's lots of vomit, there's piss, there's blood. There's a lot of stuff. And I'm just like, people have this idea that this is a... And it is a history of Hollywood movie. But people think it's so, going to be so up its own ass. And it is in a... fun way, I think. I don't hate Babylon. I don't love Babylon. I just think it's not as uptight as people think it might be looking at it. I don't know if that makes sense.
Okay.
Anyway, we're not here to talk about the Oscars because... Well, this is counter-programming. So if you're a film fan and you don't want to listen to a podcast about the Oscars, this episode is not about the Oscars. It's about Knock at the Cabin by M. Night Shyamalan.
Yes.
His fucking 25th film or something. I don't know how many films he's made, but he's made a lot. And
okay, tell me your favorite film directed by him.
You already know what it is.
Split?
No.
The other one?
That's the first one? The first one, I don't know. The first what?
Of that Split universe.
Correct.
Stuff.
Unbreakable.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. I like The Visit.
That's your favorite?
I think
okay,
so.
Okay, right. So, let me tell you all his films then.
Okay, go.
Right.
Well, do it like Eminem.
I'm not going to do it like Eminem because that is just ridiculous. So 1992, Praying with Anger. Nobody's really ever seen that, right? 1998, Wide Awake. Again, very underseen. 1999, The Sixth Sense, which everybody thinks is his first film. It's not. It's his third film.
Okay, I haven't seen it.
Unbelievable that you haven't seen it. Nominated for 6 Oscars right out of the gate. Still his biggest hit to date, by the way, in terms of money. 2000, Unbreakable. 2002, Signs. 2004, The Village.
Ah, I remember watching The Village.
Then we get into what I want to talk about, which is the decline of M. Night Shyamalan. 2006, Lady in the Water. Haven't seen it. People really didn't like it. 2008, The Happening. Have seen it.
I haven't.
Didn't like it. People didn't really like it either. But I have seen it. 2010, The Last Airbender. People hated it.
I also
haven't seen that. 2013, After Earth with Will Smith and Jaden.
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
Neither have I. But again, people really didn't like it. And so he's at this... You're like, this is the same guy that made that run of films at the start of the late 90s, early 2000s. And people would say Time Magazine was like the next Spielberg. And now he's doing The Last Airbender and After Earth. And basically everyone's like, what a pile of shit. 2015, The Renaissance Begins, The Visit.
Oh, I love that film.
Yeah, everyone was like, holy shit.
It's so good.
That, I remember that being a talking point at the time. Everyone was like, wait, he made a good film again? That's weird. 2016, a year later, Split.
Okay, I like Split.
2019, Glass.
Yes, I like Glass.
So do I, but again, then he's back into bad reviews with Glass. People not fans of Glass, but I liked Glass. 2021, Old.
I thought it was okay. It wasn't
You liked it more than me. I didn't like Old. But there are things in it that I appreciate, and I will be mentioning at some point. 2023, Not at the Cabin. So that's all his films to date. So what I wanted to do was, at the start of the episode, was just sort of discuss... I find it weird that people still treat him as like a meme or a joke. So again, as I say, that early run, early 2000s, everyone's agreeing this guy can do no wrong.
But you
then
mean,
he begins to... Oh, sorry.
So you mean like a meme, like, oh, he always make a twist in the movie?
Well, that as well, but...
I know that. Yeah. Apart from that, I don't know anything else.
No, that he's a bad director and makes bad films.
Oh, okay, no, I didn't know that. Okay. I just know, like, always, like, oh, Family Guy. Oh, let's hire M. Chamberlain so he can do
South
the thing.
Park.
Like, a lot of... No, but a lot. Also, Family Guy, blah, blah, Modern Family. They're always like, oh, is this going to end up like a movie of M. Chamberlain? And you're like, oh, okay. It's always a reference, like, a twist.
Yeah.
Like, a pop becomes famous reference, for I will think, is a twist. Okay. I didn't know that he makes that film because I don't think he makes that bad films. But
you haven't seen, again, none. We have not seen Lady in the Water, The Last Airbender, or After Earth, which are pretty much, and The Happening I have seen, but I don't really remember it. But what I'm saying is, in 2015, I remember it being a big deal. Like, oh, he's made a good film again. Is this the comeback? Is he, like Matthew McConaughey, the McConaissance, similar thing. Mm-hmm. Then Split. Well received again. 2 out of 2, make a lot of money. Glass, not well received, but makes a shit ton of money. Old, makes a shit ton of money. Well, makes a decent amount of money. And then Knock at the Cabin, we'll get into that as well. But I've seen people online, and I actually argued with someone online. They were like, is Knock at the Cabin the final proof that he's no longer a meme filmmaker? And I was like, surely that's like 5 years old. Like, surely The Visit proved that he could still make a good film, and then Split backed it up. Like, he did it a year later and it made a fuck ton of money.
Yeah.
And everybody was saying at the time, not everybody, but people talking about the Oscars, some people were saying McAvoy should have been in contention for his performance in Split.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily agree. But he's great. So I think the idea that he is a meme or joke filmmaker, and it's like, isn't it weird when he makes a good film? I'd say for the most part, that's pretty standard that he makes good films. That middle chunk, we haven't really seen it, so we can't comment. But if you go 2015, The Visit, good. 2016, Split, good. 2019, Glass, we both think is good. 2021, Old, I think is bad, you think is okay. 2023, Knock at the Cabin.
Dun, dun, dun.
Just go one word or your first thoughts before we get into spoilers and things.
It was okay.
You think okay again. So you're 2 okays in a row. I am saying Knock at the Cabin is his best film since The Comeback. I think it's better than The Visit, Split Glass and Old.
Oh, well, I'll tell you more into why I think it's okay.
Okay, fair enough. Once you're done
with this.
It has been pretty successful. Okay, $20 million budget. It's made $53 million worldwide. So a mild success.
Okay.
The only problem is, Old, his previous movie, mm-hmm. made $90 million. So he's about $40 million behind it.
Okay.
Behind what Old made. And Old made $90 million. Before that, Glass made $247 million. Oof. So he's dropping again quite yeah. quickly in terms okay. of box office. So maybe he needs a second return to form. I don't know. I think creatively, no, but maybe in the eyes of the public, he might. But anyway, it does okay. It's the first film to knock, knock Avatar, The Way of Water, off the weekend number one spot okay. at the US box office, was this film, Knock at the Cabin. And it does all right reviews-wise. Rotten Tomatoes, critic score 67%. Audience score, Rotten Tomatoes, 64%. Okay. Metacritic, 63%. IMDb, 6.1 out of 10. Letterboxd, 3.1 out of 5. So in other words, a solid night at the movies.
Okay.
Essentially is what you're going to get from Knock at the Cabin. As I already mentioned, I think it's his best film since that early run. I need to see the Village again, because I don't really remember The Village. And I know that at the time was seen as a disappointment, but now people have argued, oh, but maybe that's secretly his best. So I'll need to go rewatch that. I'm trying to think.
Yeah.
The Blu-ray box set I've got there does not have The Village. It has Signs, Unbreakable, and The Sixth Sense. And also, you just need to watch. I can't believe you've never seen The Sixth Sense.
No, but I know what's about. I know that the twist. That doesn't matter,
though. Look, you might know. Everybody knows the twist. The movie still works. It's such a great movie. Anyway. Knock at the Cabin. Let's get into Knock at the Cabin and why I think it's so fascinating to talk about.
Are we going to sing along?
Yes, of course!
I want to put on my boogie shoes.
Yeah, boogie shoes.
Leonard. Well, it's nice to meet you.
Why are you here?
I suppose I'm here to make friends with you. And your dad's too. But my heart is broken.
Why is it broken?
Because of what I have to do today.
Not going to get into the production. I initially had notes about the production of it.
Okay.
Not really going to get into it because it's been a month. Everybody already knows. But just to quickly recap, comes to him as a script based on a novel called The Cabin at the End of the World by Paul Tremblay, I believe is the author's name.
Okay.
Comes to M. Night Shyamalan as a script. He has not read the book. He reads the script of the adaptation. And they say, do you want to produce this? We've got a couple of filmmakers attached. Would you put your name behind it as a producer? He reads it and he thinks, decent idea. I don't like the way it goes. I would change the ending, basically.
Okay.
And we will also spoil the book, by the way. Turns out the initial script he read basically follows the book almost word for word. What happens when certain plot actions happen? There is a massive change in direction that M. Night Shyamalan suggests. And then when it comes back to him and he says, actually, I would like to direct it, but only if I'm allowed to make these changes, they basically give him the go-ahead. Yeah, fine, make the changes. Which is why it's called Knock at the Cabin and not The Cabin at the End of the World.
Okay.
He said he wanted to make it clear this is not
the book.
A faithful adaptation of the novel. It is the same premise, but we end up at a different point.
Okay.
And that is because halfway through, something happens in the novel that does not happen in the film. which we will talk about, because you, neither of us have read the novel.
No, but I
Googled
it.
But I Googled it as well, because I'd heard so much like about how strange it was.
Yeah.
I now know what happens in the novel, so I know, and I have to say, I like M. Night Shyamalan's version better, I'm not going to lie. I haven't read the book, but just based on the synopsis.
Yeah, me too.
So, before we get into the film itself, we always like to say, horror movie podcast for horror movie virgins, where do you go next? What do you watch next? And we watched a couple of films just on the back of watching Knock at the Cabin to say, oh, what could you watch next? So obviously, you can watch an M. Night Shyamalan film, same director, easy, right?
Yeah.
But it's a movie about faith and God and religion and potentially religious nut jobs. Who knows? So go with faith-based horror. And we're not talking satanic. It's too easy. People possessed, that's easy. Go with something like Red State. That's a pretty wild movie. And that's about religious nut jobs. Mm. Have you seen Red State?
No. What's that about?
That is about you know the, what's the church in America that, you know, the really anti-gay people?
Oh, the, yeah, I know which one.
The something something Baptist church, can't remember the name.
Yeah.
Well, it's like, again, not by name, but they've taken that and they're like, what if they, like, kidnapped gay people and were, like, killing gay people? And then the police storm it, and then they just have like a big shootout because they're like, you can't come in here. And it's like really religious nut jobs. Mm. It's wild. I think a lot of people really hate it, but I remember liking it at the time. You could go with a film we did watch, The Sacrament.
Oh, I love that one. It was
we had
so
never
good.
Seen it before.
No, and I can't believe it. It has everything I like. I mean, I loved like reading or hearing podcasts about cults. This one, like, top notch.
It is a sort of fictional version of the Jonestown mass suicides and that cult and everything. It's directed by Ty West. I basically came out and Knock at the Cabin was like, we should pair it with things that are about belief and how far can belief take people. I wonder if maybe a documentary on Jonestown might work as a pairing, because that took people to the absolute end, that their faith or their trust in this man. And then it turns out, oh wait, there's a movie that basically takes that entire story, updates it a little bit, and changes the names, and it's called The Sacrament. It's by Ty West. We'd never heard of it. We watched it. We both liked it. I mean, I liked it. You, I think, absolutely
loved
it.
I loved it. I loved it. It's so good.
So once you've gone there, obviously you're now in Ty West world, so you can watch The House of the Devil, which we rewatched as well. We had seen it years ago.
And I thought it was okay.
I think it's decent. I think it's good up until the end. I think the end just turns into like a 90s Marilyn Manson video and it's kind of boring. But I like it. You could watch X, or you could watch Pearl, which we still haven't seen, but will be seeing on
in a couple of days.
17th or something. The 14th. Of March. It comes out in cinemas here and we will be seeing it. We have waited. What else could you do? Home invasion horror. This is a home invasion movie. So home invasion horror. You could do Wait Until Dark. Classic home invasion movie. Great. You could do Better Watch Out. But that's a Christmas movie. But it is about home invasion. But once you're there, you're now in Christmas horror. So pair
Krampus!
It with, pair it with Krampus. Pair it with Gremlins. Pair it with Black Christmas. Pair it with The Lodge. Do you remember we watched The Lodge?
Oh yeah, we went to cinema to
no
watch.
We didn't, we watched it here because it didn't come out in cinemas here.
No, it was, what was the movie in the Glasgow Film Festival or what?
That's Saint Maud, I think you're talking about.
No, it's about this family in a cabin and they're playing a game and then
I can't remember the name of that. That movie was rubbish.
I thought it was The Lodge.
No, The Lodge was the one with the kid from It, I believe, and Riley Keough.
I was about to mention that one, but it's not Christmas. I mean, it's more like a cult side.
Well, it is set at Christmas, and she's taken after the kids, and then they start to play. She grew up in a cult.
No, it's not
in
Christmas.
It is set at Christmas.
It's Thanksgiving.
No, I'm sure it's Christmas. Either way, really? It's festivities, it plays into cults.
Yeah.
That comes into it.
I think that's the perfect movie to pair it with.
It's a very good one to pair it with. I don't think that's a great movie, but it pairs well with it. Oh, but talking about then Christmas. This is definitely Christmas. Silent Night from last year with Keira Knightley and a few other people.
Oh my god, that's
that
really
is
good.
A doomsday movie. Yeah. That is about the end of the world and it's at Christmas. Knock at the Cabin deals with the end of the world. These things, they all tie together.
When did you have the Kirsten Dunst's movie, Magnolia?
I've never seen Magnolia.
I mean, it's about someone being so depressed because he believes that the world is ending, but it's more like a depression and you strongly believe that happening. That's why you're depressed.
Is the world end of the world not happening in that movie? I believe it is, though. Well, the end of the world is happening.
Yeah, I think this was happening. I can't remember. I haven't seen it in so long.
There's loads of stuff to pair it with because this movie has so many ideas on its mind. Considering that it takes place almost entirely in a cabin, which is why I love M. Night Shyamalan, the guy goes for broke. He has this weird sentimentality about him where he's just so unafraid to put potentially dumb or potentially clunky or awkward ideas on screen and just take a swing at them and see what happens. And some people love it, some people hate it, sometimes people switch on what they think, whatever. That's why I think you can basically take Knock at the Cabin and go anywhere with it. As I say, faith-based, cults, home invasion, end up at Christmas, doomsday, whatever you want. It's all there.
Yeah.
So, the movie itself, this is what Yzel has been waiting for. We're finally there. Where do you want to start with the movie? Because there's one place I want to start. But where do you want to start?
Where do I want to start? In the cabin?
No, I mean about what you like about the movie or what you think is worth discussing about the movie. The basic setup, is a family of three.
Yes.
It's a gay couple and their adopted daughter.
Yes.
Staying at a cabin and they're on holiday and then people turn up and basically say, the world is going to end. We've all had visions.
And you, we need to sacrifice.
You need to sacrifice one of your family here. So we can't kill you. But you need to kill either your husband or your daughter needs to kill one of her dads.
Mm-hmm.
But it has to be a conscious choice. It can't be an accident. You have to decide to kill one of these people and that will save the world. Mm-hmm. And we can't explain why, but that's what's going to happen. And if you refuse to choose over time, we are going to basically offer up ourselves as sacrifices as evidence that this is real.
Because bad things are happening.
Bad things are happening and a portion of humanity has been judged. And that bit's a bit clunky, but that's kind of, that is the setup.
Yeah.
And it's basically, would you kill your most beloved family members, your loved ones, your closest relatives, if it meant saving the world? And how long would it take you to believe that that was actually happening? What would it take for you to get into the head? Because at first, obviously, you're going to say, you guys are fucking crazy.
Yeah.
So what does it take? How much do you have to see before you realize this is real or maybe or not? And it's that's the movie.
Yeah.
And it's a fucking 90-minute thrill ride in the cabin. And I fucking loved it.
I mean, I liked it because, yes, okay. But in some part of the movie, they tell you, okay, no, it's a part of the movie because probably this is it, the whole thing. They're like, I don't believe this.
Mm-hmm.
They show them the TV it's on, showing bad things happening, like breaking news, blah, blah. Then there's some point to say, no, that's a recorder thing because they're checking the times.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, oh, they know they're going to show this. Like, this is not real.
It's pre-programmed.
Yeah. So, I don't know why watching the movie, I always thought, this is real. This is happening. They just need to understand.
I agree.
From as an outsider, being in that situation, I probably wouldn't believe. Like, I was like, no.
But you just said you believed immediately watching the movie.
Yeah, immediately. Like, when they saw, like, yeah, this is a movie about this. About the end of the world. Like, I don't know. I probably didn't read the movie description or the trailer probably. I don't know if it put more, like, intrigue. Like, could it be? Could it not be? But I was always watching, feeling like, there's no doubt this is happening.
Yeah.
And they need to do something.
Mm-hmm.
So
how do you get them to do something? How do you do? No, so you're saying that there's no tension for you as an audience member?
Yes. Okay. I felt like it was, I don't know if I missed something or wasn't too clear, but I did miss the part that you said, Oh, what they're going to do. I don't know.
On second viewing, I can entirely see your point of view. Mm-hmm. But I think M. Night Shyamalan works around that. As in, I think it's clear to the audience, like from the get-go, this is real. That these people aren't mad.
Yeah.
These people are are telling you what's going to happen.
Yeah.
They've told you what's going to happen, and it's how do you, it's an impossible decision. But if you don't do it, everybody dies. Absolutely everybody.
Yeah.
And so I would say that I don't think this movie, I would agree, isn't that tense. I would say I think it's very, very sad. I think this is maybe his saddest movie.
Yeah, I can see that.
And that's where I think he works around it.
Sad in which way? Like the kind of people that they are like, that you're seeing that are together... To show, like, look, okay. I don't want to do this to you. I'm not that kind of person, but I had the vision. I'm here. And you're saying sad because at the end we see evidence of what their life were. Like, there's a woman with a kid. Well, the kid is not there, but it's a mom saying, like, I'm a mom, I'm a chef, and I just love my kid, and I'm not, like,
okay.
I need to do this. And then I'm a gym teacher. I love the kids I teach. I really want to do that. And then the other one,
I'm
like,
on the verge of tears just when you're saying what Dave Bautista says in that movie. And we are going to get to that. Dave Bautista,
he's the best.
Forget McAvoy and Split, and I love McAvoy and Split. Bautista in this movie is exceptional.
Oh, I 100% agree on that. He's great. I just want to give him a hug.
Right. And he's asking two people to kill either themselves or their daughter. That's what he's asking them to do.
Yeah.
And I feel like I want to cuddle him.
I know. It's like...
So, why do I think it's really sad? So, I think basically the movie works in terms of if you think about it as a larger metaphor, or not even a metaphor. As we say, we both agree this is happening in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently the novel's much more ambiguous. M. Night Shyamalan gets rid of that. There is a God and he is punishing humanity. Which means there is a God that is appeased by sacrifice, human sacrifice,
mm-hmm.
from people who will be infinitely traumatized by this. So that's a pretty depressing thought, that that's your creator and that is the creation that you live in. We live in a rigged game. There's nothing you can do about it. Either everybody dies or we continue to play a rigged game. Those are our options. Right now, those are our options.
Yeah.
That's a depressing as fuck thought, if that's real. But when I was watching it, I was thinking, okay, so the main characters in this are a gay couple. So can you see it? They talk about being... we get flashbacks to their lives when...
the family don't accept
one
them.
One of the families, Andrew.
Yeah.
Daddy Andrew and Daddy Eric. Which one's which? Jonathan Groff plays...
Would you say one of them?
No, I know, but I want to get the names right. Come on. Jonathan Groff plays Daddy Eric. Ben Aldridge plays Daddy Andrew. Just side point. Both actors, gay actors, playing gay characters. People are talking about how they don't kiss in this movie. And when was the last time you saw a gay couple on screen portrayed as lovingly as this... And actually played by two gay actors. Like, I think it's great.
The same.
But anyway, so yes, Ben Aldridge's parents, Andrew's parents, are not as accepting. And they have to lie to the adoption agency when they're adopting their daughter. When he says, my wife couldn't be here today, this is her brother.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get the flashback where one of them is attacked in a bar when they're talking about just their lives.
Yeah.
And it's hinted at, like, well, this is what it's like to be a gay person.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's just constant struggles. And so I'm watching it going, they've had to live through all this shit and they're placed at the center of the fight for survival. And I'm watching it going, okay, so that is queer rights in society, or it could be civil rights in terms of mm-hmm. African Americans. Basically, the people who have to put up the most sacrifice, the most to lose, the fight, basically, to progress us forward, are more than likely to be the ones that will never see those changes happen. So in this movie, that is, spoilers, Eric. Eric does not see the change. Eric does not see the world get saved. He sacrifices himself.
Yes.
That is an infinitely sad thought. That these people who say, society's fucked, or this fucked up thing is happening to us, we can change it, I'm probably never going to see those changes.
Oh, wow, this is so deep.
That's why I was watching it the second time going, I'm like, I don't care that this film's not that tense at parts. I think it's just so sad.
Oh, okay.
And I think that's how he works around it. That was my take from the second time I watched it.
That's you going like, okay, I'm not watching like a thriller horror. Well,
it is a thriller.
I was trying, because I went there, I was like, is this a horror movie? Is this a thriller?
It is a horror, I would
say,
yeah.
So I went there, but I think you are seeing more like as a drama.
No, it's still a horror film.
To justify that it's sad and it's this.
No, I think that's where its strength is. I'd still say it's a horror film. It still has death. It still has murder. It still has pretty graphic. It has an excellent sequence of planes falling out the sky. And as I say, the idea that we live in a world where we are overruled by some sort of creation who at any time can say, fuck you all, and the only way out of it is you have to kill this. That's terrifying. That's so scary.
So, for example, then you will tell me like movies like The Day After Tomorrow are horror films.
The Day After Tomorrow is nature getting its tone back. And I would say it is a subgenre of horror. It's okay. More of an action, but it's definitely a subgenre. Like, Godzilla is a subgenre of horror. Film, which is all about destruction.
Well, I mean, there's like monsters. Yeah, that's a monster.
But it's a metaphor for
and
the
atomic bomb. And monsters normally
associate
with horror, so... Mm-hmm. Yeah, so... Like,
or horror adjacent.
Like,
but this movie's
stuff.
Playing off of the home invasion trope, which is people coming into your house.
That too, yeah.
That's a horror trope. That is what that is.
Okay,
people
enough.
Come into your house and tell you to do terrible things or make you do terrible things. So it's definitely in the horror zone for me.
No, that's fine. I just because you mentioned like it makes you feel sad and it works around that. I was like, okay, so you're marketing this more as a drama kind of.
Not necessarily,
way,
but what I'm saying is the criticism that, oh, it's not as scary or as thrilling as it should be, I would say. But it's way sadder than it needs to be. Like,
okay.
It balances the two out, in my mind.
Fair enough. You know, that's fine.
As you said, it's so deep. Horror films don't need to get as fucking like, holy shit, man, I'm going to burst into tears here and just be so sad about my very existence. Like, existential.
Yeah.
I think that's where it works best. But I said earlier, we have to talk about... Well, first of all, we have to talk about the changes and we have to talk about Dave Bautista. I mean, we can't not talk about either of those things. Dave Bautista, what an actor. Arguably the greatest wrestler turned actor possibly ever.
Since The Rock?
Better than The Rock. The Rock has never given a performance like this.
Oh, no.
And I like The Rock in some things, like Fast Five. He's excellent in Fast Five. He has never given a performance like this. John Cena. John Cena's a great comedian, comic actor. He's never given a performance like this. Dave Bautista is treated in this movie like M. Night Shyamalan knows that this man is a fucking giant. It looks like his head's about to blow up at any moment. Like, it's so big. And he could just tear your entire wall down. Never mind the door. It's like the fucking Three Little Pigs and the Big Bad Wolf. I'll huff and I'll puff. And it's just like, he can just do whatever he wants. Like, there is no stopping him.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And yet, he comes in, he explains, one of you has to die, by the way, and then he sits back and is just like the calmest, he's so gentle.
He's soft.
He's so soft. And the movie, again, talking about balance, the movie is able to balance those two things in a way that I just did not expect. So for going, when I went to see it the second time, because you mentioned when we came out the first time, the close-ups.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned seeing a lot of close-ups.
Yeah.
The camera, like, right in someone's face.
Yes.
And you were like, that was interesting. So I didn't notice that the first time. Or if I did, it just sort of went subconsciously, like it didn't. I think I was expecting too much. So, for example, if we go very briefly back to Old, a film I didn't like, you thought was okay. The one thing that I said I loved about Old was the way the camera moved.
Mm-hmm.
And I've told you about the game of freeze tag. I still think about that sequence. And then I watched an interview with M. Night Shyamalan. There's another sequence where people are in a circle talking.
Yeah.
And the camera's in the middle. It's spinning round. And you think it's spinning round and it's going to land on the person when they say their line and spin to the next person when they say their line.
Yeah.
Like normal.
Yeah,
But the camera's spinning a bit faster than they're talking. So to the point where after it's gone round like three times, it's passing people before they can say their line.
Okay.
And he's like, that was to sort of convey the idea that time is running out for these people. Like, time doesn't give a shit about you. It's moving on. You've not said your line, it's moving on. That's fascinating.
Hmm.
When I was watching it in the cinema, that was what I was obsessed with. It's just like, this movie is made so weird. And so I think I expected Cabin in the Woods to be a bit weirder with the form. Like, what is he going to do? And what he does is close-ups. That's what he does. Which is not really new, but he does a lot of them.
Yes.
So in the second time when I went to see it, that was what I'm going to focus on. I'm going to focus on the close-ups. So the first scene in the movie, when outside collecting grasshoppers, Dave Bautista turns up, helps her collect grasshoppers, talking to her. He's being gentle, he's being nice. He's not telling her why they're there, but he's saying, you're very good at this, and, oh, can you go and tell your parents? Like, I've got some friends coming. And then she says something about Daddy Eric or Daddy Ant. She says one of them, and he says, you call your dad by your first name? And she says, oh, that's so I can distinguish between Daddy Eric and Daddy Andrew. Like, I have two dads.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this is all in close-up. Close-up Dave Bautista and close-up of the wee girl playing Wen.
Mm-hmm.
And it's close-up, close-up, close-up. When she reveals she has two dads,
mm-hmm.
and it cuts back to him, the camera is off. It's tilted.
Okay.
And it's just like, he has now realised, not only am I going to ask someone, this is going to be perceived as a hate crime.
Yeah.
Like, this is even worse than it could be.
Because
mm-hmm. they're going to think we're religious bigots that are here because they're gay.
Yeah.
And I'm just going, M. Night Shyamalan, you're a genius. That's so good. The minute she realises that and it cuts back to him, the camera is no longer it's off its axis.
Mm.
Brilliant. And then it does it again. It goes further off its axis again, another sequence. And I'm just like, oh, it's so good. It's so good to watch. Just to watch this stuff and be like, how is he putting this together? What's he thinking about behind the camera? What is it conveying as an emotion? And I think it works. Bautista, as you said, he's a gym coach.
Mm-hmm.
He talks about his students. He says, these kids are going to die if you don't do this. Like, this is what we're going to lose. We're going to lose. There's another one of, because there's three people that invade the house.
Yeah.
One of them's got a son. So I'm going to lose my son. One of them's got a nurse and all these people. And then he's like, I'm a gym teacher. Like, I'm a gym coach for young kids. I teach basketball for the boys and the girls. The boys are like, their season, they've been like 3-8 and the girls are like 5-10 or something. Like the win to loss ratio.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, so we're not very good. But I love these kids. Like, I love seeing them come into school every day. I love their smiles on their faces. And he holds up a photo right into the camera. It shows it to one of the dads. But it goes right into the camera. And we see him in the gym with these kids.
Mm-hmm.
And you can just feel the emotion coming off this guy that he knows it's an impossible choice. Even fucking Harry Potter man.
Rupert Grint,
who plays Ron Weasley, who is like the most bigoted out of all of them.
Yeah.
Because he's the one that previously attacked Andrew at the bar.
But I think he's there. That character is there to make you doubt.
Yes. But even he acknowledges they're not going to make the choice. And I don't blame them. Like, even he says out loud, yeah, I don't blame them. Because how could you? These people come into your house and tell you to do this.
Yeah.
Anyway, they don't make the choice. Rupert Grint's the first one to sacrifice himself. A portion of humanity has been judged. Boom. Dead. They kill him. The other home invaders. And then they turn on the TV to show them what that means. What does that mean for humanity? As I said, basically we're going to unlock plagues unless you make this choice. So here's the first plague. They turn on the TV. And who's on the TV? It's M. Night Shyamalan in his cameo, which is the best thing he's done in years. He is selling like a fucking Nutribullet blender or something. it's an air fryer. He's selling an air fryer.
Oh.
On like QVC or something.
Yeah, like those infomercials.
Yeah. And you're like, brilliant. I love that he always gets himself a cameo. That's his best cameo in years. It's so funny.
It's really
because
funny.
They're like, wait. And he turned on the TV. The other thing that I love about it is too many times in movies, people are like, turn on the TV and the exact thing they want to see is on.
Yeah.
Like, as soon as they turn the TV on. That is not the case in this movie. They turn it on and they wait. They watch this QVC sale for an air fryer.
Yeah.
With M. Night Shyamalan. And at one point, somebody even says to Dave Bautista, like, maybe we were wrong. Maybe our visions were wrong. And he just screams, just watch! Like, he just screams. Like, you can see the tension and the horror. And he's like, something bad is about to happen. We all saw it. We all believe it. We've just killed a man. If that's not true, we've just committed murder.
We just, yeah, so what are we doing? Yeah.
And he's terrified. And then boom, breaking news. Tsunami. Earthquake, tsunami. And we get footage of the tsunami.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine. The footage of the tsunami's fine. It's okay. It's not great.
Yeah.
Like, it's not The Impossible, you know, with Ewan McGregor.
And yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's fine. Okay. And you're like, oh, shit, okay.
But, for example, I was watching here, like, yeah, okay. Things happen like that in real life.
Right. Which and is, I was like, which is what Daddy Eric Andrew's point of view is.
Mm-hmm. That, yes.
That earthquake happened 4 hours ago.
Yes.
The tsunami's just heading land now. That happened before you got into our cabin. You already heard about the tsunami and the earthquake on, yeah. And predicted that there would be a tsunami.
Yeah.
So that has nothing to do with us.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, back of your mind, maybe he's right. I agree with you, though. I'm watching the movie going, no, he's wrong. Because then they say a second earthquake is hit, like, right on the coast.
Mm-hmm.
And that's maybe the one... Well, no, I'm gonna stick up for M. Night Shyamalan here. I'm going to say that's not a mistake. Some people could say, like, well, that removes the tension. Because they're like, well, it must be real. Because it's just happened now, live. Yeah. But I think M. Night Shyamalan is, as I say, trying to convey, no, this is real from the start. No bones, no, I'm not hiding. I'm going to say to you, if this is real, put yourself in that shoes, would you still do it? Mm-hmm. And at what point would you give in?
Yeah.
At what point would you say, I'm going to have to make the sacrifice and have the empathy for the rest of the human race? And at what point would you say, be selfish and say, no, the humanity's treated me like shit, so fuck the rest of them. Which is, we shall say, let's just cut to it, the novel, that's the novel's point of view.
Okay, okay.
So the novel, the wee girl dies.
Oh, okay.
What did you think happened in the novel?
No,
you
said I remembered, like, let them escape.
Right.
And then that's it, like, they go and escape and they don't know.
So when remember in the film when Eric leaves to get his gun from the car?
Uh-huh.
That happens in the novel. He escapes, gets the gun. Dave Bautista's character's still alive, another character's still alive. There's a tussle, a fight for this gun, and it goes off and it kills Wen. It kills the girl, the daughter. But because it was an accident, it wasn't a designated choice.
It didn't count.
They maintain that doesn't count. These things are still going to happen. At some point, Dave Bautista's character in the novel is killed or sacrifices himself. And there is a woman that's left.
Yeah, the nurse, I think.
The nurse.
Yeah.
And she she says, do you know what? Fine. I'm going to help you leave and escape or whatever. And they kind of just walk off back into the world, and they say, look, what kind of god wouldn't be happy or wouldn't be satisfied by destroying our lives? We've already had shit lives. Our daughter's just died. If that's not enough for this god, then fuck, we don't want to live in this world.
Yeah.
And they walk off into whatever. Potentially doomsday, the sunset, whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm.
That is the end of the novel. I like M. Night Shyamalan's version better because... I think it's very easy to write a story where the outcome is, fuck all you guys. That's so easy.
I'm going home.
Screw you guys, I'm going home.
Yeah, exactly. That's so easy. It's much harder to write a movie about a gay couple where one of them's like, kill me to save Earth. And you're like, wait, why? What?
That's
hold on.
Yeah.
Like,
but also,
I mean, people have accused this of being homophobic. I don't think the movie is, but people have accused it of that. Because as I say, it's about people, and there's a history with Rupert Grint's character, that he has attacked them in the bar. Like, so, are they being targeted? And then, oh, but they're the ones that have got it. They've already had a shit life. Why are they the ones, or not shit life, but they've had humanity shit on them, society. Why are they the ones that have got to give over?
Mm-hmm.
And why do they accept it? Why do they take that burden upon themselves?
Because...
And that's when my point is, that's what... all of civil rights is somebody taking the burden.
No. It's because one of them, the one that decided to sacrifice, got a concussion. That's it. He was just like, dude,
that's
please.
That's Jonathan Groff.
Crying.
Yeah, but the other one doesn't...
But he convinced the other one. Yes. The other one was there, like, since the beginning, slow, no. And the other one, just do it. And I think he just realized, look, he clearly is bad in the head, is bleeding, he might die. I just... maybe this is so real, I'm just gonna do it. But I think it's more like he got a concussion.
No.
He was about to die anyway.
You're not gonna die from a concussion.
Well, he was like clearly bleeding, that the lie was like bothering him, he needed help.
They're left alone at this point. All the invaders are dead or have sacrificed themselves. He can go to the hospital. He can take them, no questions asked. The problem is, the sky is falling down, basically. Everything's on fire. There are planes falling from the sky. I'm trying to think what... So the first is the tsunami. Then it's the plague, mm-hmm. like the virus, which one of the dads says, but that virus has been happening for months, like this isn't new, and it was pre-programmed. Then it's the planes falling from the sky, mm-hmm. which is a fucking terrific sequence.
That's crazy. Why did that happen?
When then they cut to people around the world filming on their phones and you just see planes falling out of the sky and you're like, that is terrifying.
But you know what? I love that part because to see...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like you go to that scan thing, you know, like when you can see all the planes going mm-hmm. around. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, if you go and see it right now, there's nothing in the sky. But there are planes, like, that you don't see crossing, going to London, going to...
There's always planes in the
sky. There's always planes in the sky. You don't see them. But to visualize the amount of planes mm-hmm. that are... And it's like, oh, that's exaggeration. No, like, they are there. We're just not seeing them, you know? Like, the routes are already really marked. And it's something that we don't see.
Yeah, they go through predestined routes,
The size of them, just seeing, like, it's so well done in the movie, I think.
That sequence is
terrifying. Because that's the thing. Like,
and that's when they begin to start to believe. Like, wait a second here.
Yeah, because...
The other things, this is now technological. Maybe it was a terrorist attack. But you're now, you're thinking, but it's a coincidence it's happening now, today.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a significant coincidence. And then, obviously, right at the end, when Dave Bautista kills himself as the last sacrifice, a portion of humanity has been judged, he says, you guys are going to have a few minutes after I die, but we've told you everything we needed to tell you. All my friends are now dead, or all my co-conspirators are now dead. You still haven't made a choice. You're going to have to make the choice, guys. Everything's about to come crashing down. Suicide, kills himself, and then, boom, the sky goes black. The clouds just black. Lightning. Fire, planes still falling, and you're like, it's undeniable at this point.
Yeah.
Forget his concussion. It's undeniable. The choice is now, would I wish to be alone without my husband?
Oh, no.
Or do I just let everyone perish? And he is convinced, because of their daughter, mm-hmm. to say, forget me. She's the one we said we were going to... Look, we... agree, and that's what the movie is. Like, bad shit happens every day. So what responsibility do you have as a parent to bring a child into this world? And how can you justify that morally?
Yeah.
Knowing that they're probably going to, at some point, experience something pretty terrible. That's going to happen. Maybe it's really terrible. Like an assault or worse.
Uh-huh.
Or maybe it's they get fired. Right? Maybe, you know, and whatever, right? But nobody's life is plain sailing. Or certainly the majority of people's lives is not plain sailing. So how do you morally justify knowingly bringing someone into that world? This is all in the movie's mind. And that's how he convinces her. Saying, we can stop this shit right now. Maybe even just for a moment. But we can do it. Just kill me. I've accepted my fate. And that's why I'm watching it going, that is civil rights. That is entirely what it is.
Is this the part where they're showing that it's like, I had a vision of you with our daughter.
He says that.
Yeah, like she's older and we see like the scene of
them. But we don't
know
if that vision is true.
No, I know. But yes. Because probably he's just dying.
No, he's not dying.
Like from the concussion.
Oh, right, sorry.
But yeah, I do like that scene. Like when there's like, oh, like
she's
this,
older.
This is what it can be.
Yeah.
And I was she's like, oh, that's job. So nice.
Exactly, right? That is much harder to sell to a general audience than fuck all you guys.
Screw you guys, I'm going home.
Yeah, okay.
I think.
Oh, definitely.
Which is why I love M. Night Shyamalan's
because that's easier.
Tape.
Just to say, fuck it.
Exactly.
Blah, blah. And then, what happens?
And then what happens? Yeah. And then, does it happen? Does it not? Everyone dies. It's a level playing field. This movie is acknowledging this is rigged. This shit's hard. This shit's not fair. Some people do it, some people don't. Whatever. That's what it's playing with. And I'm just, round of applause, M. Night Shyamalan. That is one of the biggest swings of the year. It came out in fucking February. You ask me, this is what I want in the Oscars race. I want movies that are doing this shit. This is wild.
Yeah, like that can happen.
Well, I don't quite believe that. I'm not a doomsday person. But I just, the idea that someone's going to take a novel, which I think is strong by what I've read.
Mm-hmm.
The synopsis, good synopsis, good for a horror. Very good idea. Love it. Great. And sometimes I really like a cynical story where the, yeah, basically it's like, fucking humanity is a piece of shit. And you're like, you know what? Yeah, probably is.
Yeah.
But at times, as I've said to you and I've said on this podcast, give me sincerity. Give me something hopeful to look forward to.
So that's the twist for him to add on all this. Look, I'll give you an end. And I'll give you a more humanistic point of view.
Yeah, even though we know that, well, sorry, that two people know.
Yeah.
Wen and Eric, or Andrew, know that this game isn't fair. This is rigged.
Yeah, I know.
There is a god. This wasn't all a coincidence. We know this wasn't a coincidence. Nobody on Earth knows that. And Jonathan Groff's character is the hero that saved everyone. He will go unmentioned in history.
Yeah.
In this timeline.
Yeah.
That's and I'm sad. Watching them. That's so sad. And that's exactly my point with this movie. This movie's fucking tragic. And I love it. 8 out of 10, 9 out of 10. M. Night Shyamalan's best in years.
Oh, no, it's not The Visit.
It's better than The Visit. It's way better than The Visit.
Oh, no, I love The Visit. Anyway, but yeah. I mean, you got more from me in your second viewing now. I get your points. And I can see now the sad part of it, and why would you? I understand more why you think this is great.
Yeah, but as I say, it's a movie that says there are people out there today in the real world who have changed society, that have had the guts to stand up and change things for the better, for what they believe in, that will go completely unremembered.
Yeah.
And they are not going to be the heroes. There's no ego about it. They are going to stay. Do you know what? Humanity's worth saving. And I would like to think, I hope that it is. Now, there's a lot of shit in the world. There's a lot of corruption. There's a lot of evil. But I would hope, on the grand scheme of things, we are maybe, because as I say, it's so easy to be like, make a movie. We're destroying the planet and we're all a bunch of, and we always fight with each other and we're terrible. I love the idea of someone making a movie going, maybe there's something that we have to offer. Maybe.
Maybe. Just a little bit, yeah.
And if someone's just willing to take the first steps, which people have done, so let's not let them down. We might not remember them,
mm-hmm,
but let's not let them down. And I'm just like, it's like the end of Pride. Where you're just like, oh my God, let's not forget that these people.
Always gets me.
Right, so, oh my God, right, that's not a horror film, but pair this with Pride.
Oh, please, please, pair this with Pride. Pride is just lovely.
That's like a fucking drama comedy.
Yeah.
Political drama comedy, whatever.
Yes, and
that's
at the
nothing
end,
to
like,
do with Knock in the Cap, but it's what? The same thing of like, let's not forget these people made changes, let's not forget them. That's a real story, this is a fictional story.
I want to cry, and
that's exactly what I get from Knock in the Cap.
I'm about to cry.
I feel like I'm just raving and
okay,
ranting in that
now
point.
That you are saying that that's kind of like the end of Pride, I'm like, oh, that's so nice. I just want to cry.
I don't know. Well, again, The end of Pride is much nicer than the end of this movie.
I know, but
It does still end with,
it's more in your face.
But it also still ends with the fact that Mark, the main character, the real guy, he died.
Yeah.
It
really
does still
strong,
end with the fact that he died really young. It's still got a hint of these people didn't quite, they might have seen a bit of what they worked for, but not entirely. And you're just, yeah, that's Knock at the Cabin. I feel like I'm repeating myself, but I fucking loved
anyway,
it.
Anyway, if you haven't seen it, go and see it. Probably now.
Yeah,
it's like
just
streaming.
Just spoiled all of it.
Yeah. But
and the novel, which we've also spoiled.
Or just like double watch it if you've already seen this movie, like count it.
Yeah.
Keep listening to us. We're nice people.
We try to be nice,
and we do our thing. You know,
and I have a job again.
Exactly. So I'm things are not that bad.
Not for me.
You just basically took 2 weeks off from your old job to the new one. So, see, not bad. 2 weeks to focus
things
on yourself.
Things can be quite bad for other people. Oh, yeah, I'm a proper, like, middle class, you know,
exactly.
British person. Well, Scottish person. Don't want to be British, but anyway. who's, like, complaining about, like, I don't have a job. And it's like, yeah, but you've got savings. You've got garden leave pay.
And you're healthy.
You've got a house. You're healthy. Like, you'll be fine for, like, 6 months. Then you can panic.
Exactly.
But, like, fucking calm down. And I'm tearing my hair out. yeah, there are people in way worse positions than me. I don't deny it.
Yeah.
But this movie kind of hit me in that spot. I'd like to see it. I wish I had seen it. I'm trying to think. Did I see it after? I think I did. After I was told I was being made redundant and getting the new job. I think that's when I saw it the second time.
That
space. Which may be why it hit so hard the second. I liked it the first time. But the second time I was like, this is his best film since Signs. It might even be better than Signs, in my opinion.
There you go. Maybe watch this movie and it will make you feel things. So.
And can I also say, before we end as well, very briefly, that M. Night Shyamalan, what a fucking history he has with child actors, by the way. So obviously you've got Haley Joel Osment in The Sixth Sense. You've got Spencer Treat Clark, I believe his name is, in Unbreakable. You've got the kids in Signs. He's excellent with children. The Visit, everybody hates the wee boy in The Visit. Because he raps all the time. But I think he's supposed to be kind of obnoxious and annoying. Like he's like a young teenager.
Yeah.
I think it works. The wee girl in this who plays Wayne. Let me get her name. She's
so sweet.
Fucking excellent.
I love
Kristen
her.
Kristen Chui. I don't know how you pronounce that actually. Sorry. She's excellent in this movie.
She's
and this
really
movie
cute.
Makes
like
a
her.
Great use of the fact that things. And also when they first invade the house. The camera's always at her level until the dad picks her up.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes up to her level, and it's like, this is a child's eyes, and it's she shouldn't be seeing this stuff. This is way too violent for her.
Yeah.
Which is why I think the movie works as a PG-13 when it cuts away from the violence.
Mm-hmm.
And we only see, like, blood stains rather than
they cover
actual kills.
Like her
ears and things.
Put cartoons, and we hear the cartoons are so loud, so they cover other things.
I think it really, really works. So, yeah. Henry Shyamalan, please keep making movies. Please keep making swings like this. I know people keep saying things like, how does this guy keep getting making... Like, that's another thing. Like, talk about memes. How does this guy keep getting money to make films? And it's like, well, one, his last five films have all made money. They've all made a profit.
Yeah.
And two, since The Visit, Split, Glass, Old, and now this, he's financed them himself. That's how he keeps getting money to make movies. He's saying, fuck it, I'll do it myself. So... You've got to be angry at him, but if somebody's able to pay or remortgage the house to pay for their own movie, that's a bit of a risk.
Yeah.
And every single one has paid off.
Exactly.
Profit,
it's like
profit,
a,
profit, profit.
Like a bet.
And they so if you don't want to make it to make more movies, don't go and see them.
Fine.
But guess what? A lot of general audiences want to go and see them.
Yeah.
So.
And he always makes his money back.
Exactly. As I say, this one, $53 million on a $20 million budget. So not great hit, but decent enough. Considering he put the $20 million in. Our next episode will be... Do you know?
You'll see when you see a title.
I already know what it is. It's the box set.
Oh,
the Universal
Monsters.
Which was The Mummy.
Okay.
The next one is The Mummy. Talking about The Mummy. Because Brendan Fraser, he might win an Oscar. And it's not the 1999 Mummy, but anyway, it's The Mummy.
Yes.
From Universal Pictures.
So, thank you for listening.
Gracias por escucharnos. Oh, wait, have we flipped this?
Y hasta la próxima.